to see everyone out again tonight. Smaller crowd than I would say normal on a Sunday evening, but really appreciate everyone that is here. This morning, I should go ahead and say, just because I preach on hospitality does not mean that I don't think that we are hospitable, by the way. I didn't want it to come across in that way, but just something that we need to maybe do a little better. And so, hope no one was terribly offended by that. But I can't tell you how many people said, well, you were preaching at me today. I said, yeah, me too. So, that's that. I'm not apologizing. I'm just clarifying. So, tonight I want to tell you where I began thinking about this. So, again, I was back home in Thanksgiving, and they were studying the life of David and Saul. And so I began really thinking about the life of David and Saul as the teacher was pointing out some things that I hadn't really ever considered when I thought about him. So I just began reading the story of David and Saul over and over and over again. And I wish time would permit and attention would permit me to read the story of Saul and David and this scenario right here. But that is impossible to do. So I hope that what I do tonight, it will summarize a story in which most of us know very well to personalize that story to us. Because when we're watching movies or when we're reading books, we find ourselves trying to relate to the characters, don't we? We see, man, why did they do that? What could possibly be going through their head that they would do that? Or, oh yeah, I've done that. I get that. I know why they're doing that. And one of the things that really jumped out at me as I'm reading the story of Saul and David is just how different they are. And I think about it from this perspective of, if I've got to pick one of the two, I have to ask myself the question, which one best describes me? Neither one of them are going to fit me perfectly by any stretch, and neither one are perfect. But I'll tell you what, I find myself a little more on the Saul side of the equation than I might want to readily admit. And I would like for you to think about that this evening as we consider which one best describes me, Saul or David. I want to use these two passages to begin with. One that was just read by Kevin. And by the way, the reason why I couldn't remember who read the passage this morning right here is because no one read the passage this morning right here. He read it from the table, so I couldn't picture who had just stood up there. But it was Kevin this morning. So, anyway, you're there in 1 Samuel, I hope, still in chapter 13 of 1 Samuel, where Samuel says to Saul, after Saul has offered a sacrifice in which he was not to offer, he was to wait on Samuel, and it is said of him there in verse 13 and verse 14, "You have acted foolishly." Anyone ever told you that was dumb? Yeah, happens to me all the time. "You acted foolishly." Now, here's why it's foolish. Because you've not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which He commanded you. And isn't that the truth? When you don't keep what God says to do, you're an idiot. You are a fool. Because it does not work out well for you. Because look what would have happened if you had kept it, he says. "For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever." If you had acted, and let's use the word wisely, and listening to God, your throne would be established forever. But verse 14, "But now your kingdom shall not endure, it will not stand. For the Lord has sought after himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people, because you have not kept the Lord, what the Lord has commanded you." Now put yourself in Saul's shoes for just a second. It's all right within your grasp. That's what Samuel tells Saul. You could have had everything that you wanted if you just had followed what God said to do. But because you didn't, he's gone somewhere else. He's now seeking someone different. And that man we know later on to be David. Now, I want you to notice a New Testament passage that sums up David for just a second. Go to Acts, the 13th chapter. And it was right about this time last year at which I emphasized this in a particular lesson. I think it was actually the month of December. And got us to thinking about purpose in one way. And Paul, as he is in Antioch, he is describing that David wrote about what the Christ would do. How the Christ would not be allowed to suffer. But I want you to notice verse 36 of a statement that is made about David. And it is said, "For David, after he had served the purpose of God in his own generation, he fell asleep and was laid among his fathers, and he underwent decay." David is said to have served God's purpose. Saul is said he served his own purpose, didn't he? He acted foolishly. And that's what we really want to talk about. So tonight I want to look at two things that are opposites with David and Saul. And we're going to see them side by side. But I want you to notice something before we begin, because I noticed this and I had not noticed it before. Remember we read, you can go back to 1 Samuel chapter 13. I want you to notice this fall of Saul and this rise of David. And how this statement that is made in verse 14, he has sought a man after his own heart. It is a very generic thing that is stated to Saul about how his kingdom is going to be taken by some other man. But I want you to notice how, as the story goes, it gets a little more specific. Go now to chapter 15 and go down there. And this is after Saul's second huge mistake, in which he does not follow the Lord, in which, again, he does what he wants to do. And so down in verse 28, he says, "So Samuel said to him, 'The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it,'" and here's a little more specific, "'your neighbor who is better than you.'" It's no longer just a man, but it is your neighbor. It is someone apparently that you know, or a kinsman, or a countryman, but it's a little more your neighbor. But then notice it with Saul, after he is trying to kill David. Go to chapter 24 of 1 Samuel. And notice verse 17, as he is speaking to David, a man after God's own heart, we see him saying to David, this is Saul saying to David, "You are more righteous than me." Now go down now to verse 20. "Now behold, I know that you will surely be king." Put yourself in Saul's shoes for a second. You now know who's getting your throne. And you now know that the throne was within your grasp. And you didn't get it because of yourself. Because you didn't listen. You didn't obey. So I don't know if you've ever lost out on a job or something because you did something that was stupid. I'm sure there are plenty of people who they missed out on something and they can only blame themselves. That's Saul. He's got no one but to blame but himself. So here's something that we're going to note about Saul. Saul couldn't hold on to the throne because he was alone. That's just all there was to it. But that was not always the case. Go back to chapter 10 of 1 Samuel. Samuel chooses, or I should say, God tells him, this is the one you're going to get. You go, you get this man, you'll find him. And so Saul, when he is told that he's going to be king, is going to be like, man, how can I be king? I'm of a small tribe, I'm of all this, I'm of all that. And he says, you'll know for sure. Now go down to verse 6. Samuel says to him, "Then the Spirit of the Lord will come upon you mightily, and you shall prophesy with them and be changed into another man. And it shall be when these signs come to you, do for yourself what the occasion requires, And here's the phrase, "For God is with you. And you shall go down before me to Gilgal. And behold, I will come down to you, and I will offer burnt offerings and sacrifice peace offerings. And you shall wait 7 days until I come to you and show you what you should do." And verse 9, "So it happened when he turned his back to leave Samuel that God changed his heart, and all of those signs came about on that day." Now, this all, God changed him. And God changed his heart or gave him another heart. What does that mean? He was a different dude that day. And don't we say that about people some days? They were one way before, and then God is with them, and they become now something totally different than what they were. And that's exactly what it was. Saul was alone. The Lord was with him. But how long does that last? Consider down just a little bit further. Go down now to chapter 14 and realize that just because the Lord was with him that day and he was one of those prophets that day, doesn't mean that the Lord was with him every day. So there was another time where there was this battle that was going on with the Philistines. And Saul wants to go down and he wants to get rid of them all. And so you'll notice in verse 36, Saul said, "Let us go down after the Philistines by night and take spoil among them until morning light, and let us not leave a man of them." And they said, "Hey, do whatever seems good to you." And they noticed this. And the priest said, "Let us draw near to God here." And so Saul inquired of the Lord, "Shall I go down after the Philistines? And will you give them into the hand of Israel?" But he did not answer him on that day. I want you to notice that line of thinking, wasn't it? He wanted to go to battle, and he wanted to kill them all. But guess who was an afterthought? God was an afterthought. The priest had to remind him, "Hey, Saul, we should probably ask the Lord if this is what he wants us to do." He said, "Okay, fine, things good." But the Lord did not answer him. And it only gets worse. Look at chapter 15. After that great sin in which he commits, in which he is told to kill all of the Amalekites, and he spares the best flocks, and he does all of that, and he spares the king, Samuel walks back with him. But notice verse 34. At the end of that story, Samuel went to Ramah, where he lived, and Saul went to the house of Gibeah of Saul, and Samuel did not see Saul again until the day of his death. And Samuel grieved over Saul, and the Lord regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel. He's dead to them. He has totally left them all alone. And this is one of the interesting things that the man was pointing out in class, is that really the chain of command of importance in these days was not king. He was not the most important person in the nation. The most important person and people in the nation were the prophets. The people who were given the message by God. And you would even notice that in David's day, wouldn't you? David, yeah, he wrote all those psalms and he wrote all those things. But he too had to ask the Lord what to do. And it was the prophet Nathan who came to him and said, "Hey, you're the man." It's not the king that was the most important. And so what happened is the most important person in the nation of Israel, they walked out on the king. Because the king had walked out on God. And so you know in chapter 18, after David has defeated Goliath in chapter 17, and you see in verse 10, "That now it came on the next day that an evil spirit from God came mightily upon Saul." Earlier a spirit came on him where he was able to prophesy. Now a spirit comes on him so that he is tormented. And he raved. And so 12, "Saul was afraid of David, for the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul." Can't emphasize enough of how helpless a person is when they don't have God. There is nothing that they can do that will accomplish anything that will last. Remember, Saul had the throne in his grasp, but he didn't follow God. And he said, surely your kingdom will not stand, and it will be torn from you and given to another. When God leaves you alone, that is not where you want to be. But the one who served his purpose in his generation, David, was the opposite. David had God, didn't he? How many times do you see that? You would see that as David really comes on the scene in chapter 17 with his battle with Goliath. But you remember how he had the Lord even before that? Go down now to verse 37 with those animals, right? And he's trying to convince Saul, hey, let me fight Goliath. And so verse 37, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistines. David, at this young age, said, the Lord had already delivered me, and the Lord will deliver me from these things, from Goliath, that great giant. And what does our text tell us down in verse 46? When he does defeat the giant. So verse 6, David says to Goliath, 46, the day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you, and I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all in Israel, all on the earth, may know that God is a God in Israel. And so that all the assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and He will give you into my hand. The only way you're going to defeat the giants in your life is if you have God. Saul couldn't defeat anybody. In fact, he was too cowardly to even go out there. And maybe it's because he knew he would fall if he went. I tell you, he knew he had God. Now I want you to consider another story here. I want you to consider down in verse 8, chapter 18. When you remember, Saul gets all jealous because the women are singing, Saul has slain his thousands, and David has slain his 10,000s. And so Saul looks for a way to get rid of David. Well, one, by throwing a javelin, a spear at him. He said, well, that didn't work. So let me try another way. Let me put him as commander of the army, and I'll put him out in battle, and he'll probably die that way. Oh, but notice what happens down in verse 14. David was prospering in all his ways. Why? For the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw that he was prospering greatly, he dreaded him. He was afraid. He was terrified because he now knew this is the one. This is the guy who's taking it from me because he had God. Now notice one more thing here is that God did not deliver him into the hand of Saul. Now notice this down in chapter 23. David is on the run for years. And David, when he would get the chance to talk to Saul, while Saul was chasing him down and wanted to kill him, he's like, why are you coming out as against a flea? You ever thought about that? Wouldn't hurt a fly is the way we say it. Or imagine you're just spending all your time going after a little mosquito or a little gnat, and you're chasing it all over the house. And you're just going, instead of just letting the thing come to you and smacking it when it comes to you, you're chasing it all over and you're never catching it, and you're going all over the place, right? How would you think of someone who's just chasing it around? You're crazy. You're a madman. And by the way, it's just a gnat. It's just a flea. It's not that big of a deal. I'm not out here to harm you, David said. But here you are, you're chasing me everywhere. I'm on the run. And notice why he was never caught. Look down in verse 14 of chapter 23. And so David stayed in the wilderness in the strongholds, and he remained in the hill country in the wilderness of Ziph. And notice this, Saul sought him every day, but God did not deliver him into his hand. When I think about this story of someone who was prospering greatly because the Lord was with him, and someone who was being tortured day by day, does that remind you of anyone else in the Old Testament? That reminds me of Joseph. Of how he's got that woman, Potiphar's wife, hanging on him every single day. And remember what he said? How can I do this great wickedness against God and my master? And that gets us to the second difference between David and Saul. What motivated Saul? He did. Saul was self-motivated. So go back now to chapter 13. That's a good one to look at. And we saw that. Kevin just read that for us. When he offers the sacrifice that he is not supposed to offer, he tells us why he did it. You're not there, Samuel. Samuel, you should have been here. You told me you were going to be here. Anybody ever done that? Say you're going to be there at a certain time and you run a little late? Especially if you're going by foot. It might take you a little longer on a journey, I would think. Or maybe this was a test. I do not know. But whatever the case, he's not there on time. And the people get a little antsy, right? And so what happens? Saul says, bring me the offering. So verse 10, as soon as he finished, Samuel showed up. And don't you love that? You just did something you know you're not supposed to do. And in walks your husband. In walks your wife. In walks your parents. And you're caught red-handed. Or in walks your boss, whatever the case. And now what do? You start backing up. You got excuses for why it is. And notice what it is in verse 11. I saw the people scattering from me. Saul is a people pleaser. That's just all there is to it. In chapter 15, you would see the same thing when he doesn't kill the Amalekites. He goes on to blame the people again. And you would notice that down in verse 24. You would see that. I've sinned. I have indeed transgressed the command of the Lord, your word, because I feared the people and listened to them. People that are self-motivated. And we use that term as a good term in our society. And in some cases it is. But in the religious world, when you are self-motivated, that means you're looking out for yourself. And so what he was willing to do is listen to the people, even though it was in direct contrast to what God had told him to do. I feared the people. Did that ever describe you? Because I'll tell you what, sometimes it's hard to say things, and I fear the people. And that's someone who is more concerned about themselves than about God. And I want you to know something else that Saul was motivated about. He was worried about his throne, about himself. I want you to go now to chapter, I believe it's 21, or chapter 20. And David is being chased a little bit by Saul, and he's worried that Saul is still going to try to kill him. And Jonathan, remember his close friend, who is Saul's son, says, nothing's going to happen to you without my father telling me first, because we're close. And David said, well, I'm not so sure about that, so let's make a deal. You go, and I'm supposed to be at your father's house tomorrow. And it was this feast. He says, if everything is good, we'll work out the little deal. Remember, he's going to shoot the arrows and all of that stuff. Well, there was a 3-day feast. And the first day goes by, and Saul notices that the seat of David is empty. He doesn't think anything about it. He just said maybe he had something to do. Second day rolls by, and there is no David. And David says, uh-oh, Saul says, something is up. Jonathan, what's up with David? And this is an interesting story. Jonathan kind of lies because David kind of told him to lie. There's some deceit that goes on, which is not good. But this happens in this way. And when Saul finds out, I want you to notice what Saul says to his own son in verse 30. Saul's anger burned against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman." We would say that in our day a little differently. But when somebody says that to you, they ain't happy, are they? "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman." Meaning, you're not my son. You've traded me. "Do I not make known to you that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? Don't you know I'll make you look bad, son?" So verse 31. "For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established." That's all he was worried about, was his own son's kingdom being set up. And he had been told years before, "I'm ripping the kingdom from your hands." And yet he still thinks he can keep the throne. He doesn't care what God says. He only cared about himself. And I'll tell you something else that he didn't care about. He didn't care about the anointed ones of the Lord. Who's anointed? Prophets, priests, and kings. David is on the run. And David and his men, they have no food in which to eat in chapter 21. And they get to this city of Nob. And they get there, and he asks the priest, "Do you have any food for me and my men? We've been on the run. We had to leave in a hurry. We don't have any weapons. We don't have any food. Do you have anything for us?" "Well, we only have the consecrated bread." And he says, "Give it to us." "Are the men holding?" "Yeah, the men are holding." "Okay, give it to us." So he gives them in. And he takes the sword at which he cut off the head of Goliath. And he takes that sword and uses it as his own sword. Now, there's a lot of debate about what David did. Is that right or is that wrong? I'm going to tell you, I lean towards it was wrong. But there's some things that Jesus says about it that may make me wrong in that particular instance. But nevertheless, he goes on. There's a little dude there that was helpful. How did I get kicked out? I guess I touched the screen. Dude got kicked out. His name is Doeg, and he was a servant of Saul. And what he did was when he saw that the priest helped out David, he ran back and he told Saul about it. And Saul says, "Yep, let me go deal with this." And I want you to pick up the story, and you may very well know the story, but notice chapter 21. Actually, it's 22 in which that happens. And the verse that I want is verse 13 to begin with, of chapter 22. Saul said to him, "Why have you and the son of Jesse conspired against me, in that you've given him bread and a sword and inquired of God for him, so that he would rise up against me by lying in ambush as it is this day?" Saul thinks that they conspired. That's how he's going to get the throne. But the priest says to him, "Hey, is today the first day I've helped him? Is today the first day that I have inquired of the Lord?" And the answer is, "No. I've been doing this for quite some time." Now go down to verse 17. So the king said to the guards who were attending him, "Turn around and put the priests of the Lord to death." Why? Because their hand is with David, and because they knew that he was fleeing, and they did not reveal it to him. Had they done anything wrong? Have they committed any sin? No. He just says they're against me. And he doesn't care that they are priests. And all his men who were standing around him, notice their reaction, verse 18. Or the end of the verse there. But the servants of the king were not willing to put forth their hands to attack the priests of the Lord. His servants were like, Saul, we can't do this. And Saul said to Doeg, the tattletale, you strike your hand. And he did. And notice who they put out. 85 priests of the Lord. And notice who else they did. Verse 19. The whole city of the priest with the edge of the sword, both the men and the women and the children and infants and oxen and donkeys and sheep, he struck with the edge of the sword to his own land and to his own priests. But what did he do back in Amalek? He spared the ones of the flock and of the king that were valuable. Because he did what he wanted to do. And these were done in anger. He didn't care about anyone that the Lord had anointed. While David cared what God said. David was motivated by God. As we already saw, he was a man after God's own heart. What God wanted him to do, that is what he attempted to do. And Saul recognized that, didn't he? You are more righteous than I, we saw earlier. And that you've not done harshly with me, even though I've dealt poorly with you. You're more righteous than me. You're better than I am. But yet that didn't change Saul a bit. And don't we do that sometimes too? We're willing to admit that someone is better than we are. And that doesn't bother us in the slightest. We're just okay with that. We're okay that you're more righteous. Because I'm self-motivated. I care about myself, not about God. But those famous statements of David cared about the Lord's anointed. Go there to chapter 24. David, while on the run, has the opportunity to take Saul out. And all of his men around him are saying, take him out. And David cut off at the end of verse 4, chapter 24. David arose and he cut off the edge of Saul's robe secretly. And I often wonder about this scene. They're in the cave. And I wonder if he sneaks in there all quietly. He goes in there secretly. He cuts it off. And notice verse 5. It came about afterward that David's conscience bothered him because he had cut off the edge of Saul's robe. Would that have bothered your conscience? This dude that is trying to kill you every single day. And you know what? I didn't kill him. I just made sure he knew that I was there and I could kill him. Did that bother your conscience? To David, it did. To David, he thought he was going a little too far, and he said in verse 6, he said to his men, it's like, man, what are we doing here? Far be it from thee because of the Lord that I should do this thing to my Lord. The Lord's anointed would stretch out my hand against him, since he is the Lord's anointed. I don't care how bad of a man he is. The Lord picked him. The Lord anointed him. And I'm going to give him that respect. And notice what his men did, verse 7. David persuaded his men with these words. And he didn't allow them to rise up against Saul. I don't know if I could have been persuaded in that. That's the difference in a person who respects God and respects God's authority and those that have been placed in authority. We talked about a little bit of that on Wednesday night. When elders, there's not to be an accusation that is brought against elders without the mouth of two or three witnesses. Or when government is put in place. And how we talked about this morning in class downstairs, you pay taxes to whom taxes are due. Even when they are downright dirty thieves and murderers. do I have the same conscience in which David had if I do one little thing that kind of, we might say, jabbed at him? Would that bother me? David did, because the Lord had chosen him. So as I close out, which best describes me? Am I alone because I'm so self-motivated? I'm so self-absorbed? And that's the only thing I care about is me. Or am I helped because all I care about is what God wants from me? David is going to make mistakes. And David made mistakes along the way. But that desire to please God was always there. So sometimes we don't know how to do it. Sometimes we get so wrapped up and we start trying to take care of things our own way. And don't we see that with other great men of faith? The Abrahams of the world? The Moseses of the world? And the question that we have to ask is, what really motivates me? Myself or God? Too many times I'm afraid I answer the question, myself. I hope that's not you. But if it is, maybe we will be more like people who are after pleasing God. If you're subject to the invitation this evening in any way, we'd ask that you come now as we stand and as we sing.